Well, today's a really practical talk about how to plan a funeral, a set of decisions that many of us have to make for people we love. And often the time is short in this country because, although in Britain there's often an elapse of a week or so before a funeral takes place, in New Zealand it's often far less time than that. So we're often under pressure to make a set of decisions when we are not always entirely clear what the deceased wanted. And it may be unfamiliar territory for us. So I'm trying to give you a few ideas and frameworks in order to equip you for that. And it's also, of course, why I'm constantly urging you to make funeral arrangement plans for yourself, because it just makes life a whole lot easier for other people amongst your family and friends. Well, first of all, the question is, what is a funeral for and what does it do? And I'm going to argue that what a funeral does is it's an opportunity for us to say goodbye to the person who has departed, and also it's to a chance to accept that things are different now. That person is in a different kind of relationship to us. And it's also, therefore, both a transition ritual and a farewell ritual. And it's a great help to us pastorally for that sense, and it helps in our grieving also. And I think that when a funeral functions well, it does three things. It comforts the living. It's a chance to remember with gratitude the person who's departed, who I'm going to argue later on in this little talk. But that aspect of funeral services has tended to be overplayed and overdone in recent years. And finally, it's an opportunity to pray for the person who's gone, to assist them on their journey to God. The climax of the service, where it's all heading, is about at the very end, called the commendation and commitment. Those are the words where the vicar says, go forth upon your journey, O Christian soul. That's the commendation prayer. And the committal prayer, that's the earth to earth, ashes to ashes, dust to dust one. That's where it's all going. That's the point at which we are assisted to accept that the person has really gone from us. And what I think a Christian funeral does is to insert the life and death of the person who's been talked about into the life, death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. It's as though we're the picture and Jesus is the frame. And once you get it in the frame, it all comes together. And his life, death and resurrection begins to interpret ours. And I think when the prayers and the hymns and the readings are well chosen, that's precisely what happens. Now, of course, we are free to ask for certain readings and hymns, but the priest can do that for you, and that's no problem. But try and choose appropriate ones. It's amazing how often people remember hymns from their Sunday school days. It's amazing how often I've been asked if we can have All Things Bright and Beautiful at the funeral. I think a funeral should be in a church, not in a funeral director's chapel. That's what Christians ought to be doing, saying goodbye to people in God's house where they'll be worshipping regularly. And nowadays, funerals tend, in their entirety, to be in churches, including the commendation committal, because often they are cremations afterwards. And there's a certain completeness about that, and they're not left with difficulties about how we stage the meeting with people afterwards, and then the commendation committal. Of course, if it's a burial, there does need to be that pause between those two things. I think that funerals should be public and not private. We just don't know how many lives the person has touched, and they want a chance to say goodbye, and if they can't get that chance, it leaves them in a little space in their grieving, which is why we have requiems for those who have not had public funerals here in church. I want to talk now about how to write a good eulogy. How you write a good eulogy is this. You say, what does this life mean? What's the theme that interprets this life? Or the two or three themes. And you pick a few incidents and vignettes from that life to illustrate the theme. You don't drown the whole thing in detail. You don't lose it in long narrative that gets us nowhere. You stick to the theme, and always understanding, as I say so often, that less is more. Long eulogies lose the audience. And there should only be one or two, I think. but it's not necessary to have a whole lot of them. I think that one needs to resist pressure from family, friends, or friends that are part of the advisement to say, can I just say a few words? I've heard some disastrously inappropriate information offered as a result of that. You need to pick your eulogist very carefully indeed. We're living in a time when people have never been keener to get behind a microphone, and fewer have been actually trained in the art of public speaking, have been to debating schools. And so therefore, you need to choose very carefully to be sure this person can do the job. And of course, I think open mics are a very bad idea, both in terms of repetition and inappropriate information being offered in very unpredictable situations resulting. A decision to be made is whether to have a Requiem Eucharist and have the funeral service in the context of that. That's what I'm having, because it's the most powerful Christian prayer available, or a straight down the line funeral service. And another decision you need to make is about technology, because these days funeral directors are very keen to wheel out all the latest technology they have and to have PowerPoint presentations or film clips shown as part of their service. I don't think that's appropriate in a church service. The place to have it would be at the social function afterwards. And in fact, the display of PowerPoint images often provides a place of quiet reflection while the early of the social gathering is taking place. Another decision that needs to be made, particularly when a cremation is where it's all going, is where the ashes will be placed. And the problem with ashes being, you know, laid at sea or deposited in the person's favourite geographical area is, what about people often want somewhere to go to remember the person, to continue their grieving? I love to lay flowers on my parents' the place in Columbine, the Bacon site where they are. And so I think that that's an important thing that we do for those who grieve and mourn us. And that's not possible if the ashes have just been deposited somewhere. And if you're going to be buried, I think it would be a good idea to choose your burial plot now, because it's surprising, many cities in New Zealand now the choice is quite limited. And that's an interesting thing. I mean, there are quite a few choices here in Dunedin, but that needs to be thought about too. We used to have Columbarium open site. Churches are under pressure to have them now. The trouble is the administrative burden gets very considerable, and our parish administrators spend half their time just sorting through all the details of all that. And finally, I want to talk about expense. Funerals, straight down the line, no-frills funerals cost around $9,000 now in New Zealand. That's a lot of money. There's a way around that. We talked about that briefly. In the East of Christchurch now, where people often don't have money, what they're doing sometimes is getting the departed cremated and then bringing their ashes to the church and saying, please organise the service around that. I wouldn't highly recommend it, but I understand why people are doing it, and it's one way of addressing the problem. Now, in order to deal with the expense of funerals, of course, often people are offered prepaid funerals, and that's fine, providing you're sure that that undertaker firm is going to be around for a while. And what you need to do is to check that it's part of the Funeral Directors Association of New Zealand, because if it is, then there's likely to be an underwriting scheme guaranteeing that if the firm goes down, they will honour the commitments of the prepaid funeral. Without that, you're in a potentially perilous situation. It's also the case that insurance companies are very keen to sell us policies to cover the cost of funeral service. I've been wrong twice about that just this year. And it's a bit of calculation and gamble, because if you enjoy a reasonably long life in retirement, you may end up paying more in premiums than you actually would if you paid for the funeral service. I'd be more inclined to take the idea of, if you want to be prepared in that kind of a way, set aside a little savings account and just have regular fortnightly or monthly contributions into it. That's what a friend of mine does to deal with her healthcare costs. She ought to know she's a blood care, she's a blood scientist. She says health insurance is so costly now, I just have a savings account to deal with that situation. But you need to remember that funeral expenses are the first charge on your estate. In other words, your estate will cover that, even if the funeral director has to wait a while for it to be paid out. Well, I'm sorry that's been a bit too practical and cold-blooded in some ways, but I think that we do need to know these things in terms of making our decisions. And above all, it's thinking clearly what we are trying to achieve in this service and having a bit of prior thought for it. Let us be helpful. Spoken in the name of God, I hope, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.